clear what it is and what we need to do.
You know, this crisis gets a lot of attention and gets a lot of media, and I think people are tuning out to it, and which is really makes it more difficult to for any kind of progress or forward change. But if it happens in your family, or if it happens to someone close to you, because there's a good chance in your neighborhood and on your cul-de-sac that there's two or three houses that this has affected those families, is that just a little bit of compassion, some caring, really start to educate yourself and start to look at people that use substances. They're people. They're just individuals. They're like everybody else. Every other family, like my son, he played hockey. He played baseball. He went to high school. He, you know, they just the normal, everyday, average teenage kid, and grew up in a time where OxyContin was quite popular. During that. But so I just think that you need to educate yourself, to open your mind to the fact that we have stigmatized substance use for so many years. We moralize it when it's not a moral issue. It's a medical issue when it comes to addiction, and that we need to just kind of look at it a little bit differently. When people need help, they need help. When people ask for help, we need to have help available for them. But like you said at the beginning, for me, it comes down to education. Like, really look a little deeper, look a little past what your inherent biases are. Maybe also think a little bit about what your relationship is to substances and where you stand on that. Because we can look at substances as being alcohol, caffeine, tobacco, illicit drugs, prescription drugs. And also recognize that a lot of youth that get started in this need a safe place and somebody to talk to about. And that most youth try substances in the home the first time. And that's something we need to be prepared to discuss. So talk to your kids about, we talk to our kids about safe alcohol consumption. You know, if you're going to go to a party, how do you drink? What should you do? You know, that type of thing. Well, we need to talk to our kids about safe drug use at the same time, but do it in a way that you're not just condemning them if they even think about doing it, but in a way that they're kind of from the educated point of view saying this, you know, there are substances, you're going to come across them, you know, kind of approach it that way. And I think that, you know, for me, I keep coming back to education. Educate yourself. There's so many resources out there that do that. There's so many different organizations that are willing to help, like, you know, Moms Stop the Harm. We get new members. Our organization is growing by leaps and bounds, and we don't, in a way that is just heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
That we get probably anywhere between 5 to 7 new members a week from across the country. And it's really hard to justify what we see that's happening politically to what we know is happening within people's families.
Right. Well, thank you so much for talking to me today, and I'm very sorry for your loss. Can you tell me how people can find out a bit more about Mom Stop the Harm?
Okay, you can just go online. It's momstoptheharm.com, and there's a lot of different links on there to resources. We do have support groups for families. We have a bereavement group that's Healing Hearts, and we also have support groups called Holding Hope, and they are operated both in person and virtually across the country. We also have sections with, you know, different areas of resources, you know, that you can utilize and educate yourself with. And you can always reach out to us at info@momstoptheharm.com or here in BC at bcmomstoptheharm.com. And there's always somebody on the other end of the line that's willing to talk to you, particularly if you're in crisis. There's always somebody that will get back to you.
Right. Well, thank you so much. Tracy Letts is the board vice chair of Moms Stop the Harm. Thank you for speaking to me today on such an important issue.
Well, thank you for having me.
Mom Stop the Harm is a national organization working with and on the issue of the poison drug crisis, which is affecting us very much here in British Columbia and in the Vancouver area. The BC Coroner report on 2023, 2,511 people died from tainted drugs, not just opioids, but as Tracy mentions in that interview, just about any illicit drug these days has the potential to be tainted with substances you're not expecting. We're 8 years into the public health emergency on this issue, and nevertheless, things do not seem to be getting better. That tragic number, 2,511 deaths in 2023, seems to go up every year. And for all the talk and all the public concern, we don't seem to be winning on the problem. Thank you to Tracy Lutz for speaking to me and Moms Stop the Harm for the work they do. Tracy Lutz is the board vice chair for the BC chapter of Moms Stop the Harm, and I spoke to her on Thursday last week, February 29th. Let's take a quick look at the weather.
Yeah, it snowed.
It did snow.
It snowed yesterday.
I lived sort of closer to downtown, near the water.
Approximately Main Terminal, right?
Yeah, in that area, right?
Yeah.
So we got a bit of a slushy stuff coming down, and I drove all the way down to the ferries and back yesterday.
That was out yesterday evening, and it was snowing in Burnaby. Okay.
So, yeah, it wasn't any snow near where I was or where I was traveling yesterday, so I was really surprised to arrive up here this morning to... it's very much a winter wonderland up here.
Well, winter, we'll put it that way.
Well, you know, there's snow everywhere up here at SFU, and it's still on all the trees, so it's got that sort of beautiful winter look. It's not snowing now, but who knows what's going to happen. Well, you know what? Mm. Environment Canada has a bit of an idea about what's going to happen, so why don't we look at that? Well, it's... the forecast this week is for sunny with clouds through most of the week. More chances of snow tonight in certain areas. It's going to get down to negative 4 degrees, and we're going to have negative temperatures overnight till for most of the rest of the week, until Thursday or so. But pretty warm in the daytimes with highs up to 6 or 7 degrees, including all the way up to 8 degrees. On Thursday, and then things are going to get a little warmer but wetter come next weekend. So if you're coming up here to SFU, expect the snow, and who knows what will happen elsewhere, because the weather forecast is just that, a forecast. Do you like the snow, Peter?
Not particularly.
I always kind of like it in Vancouver because we don't get a lot of it. So it's fun for a few days, especially if it's nice snow. I'm not such a fan of...
We don't get hurricanes either. I don't want it to come at least once in my lifetime either. So.
I've never experienced a hurricane. That's probably a good thing.
Yes.
All right. Time for Bird Note. And then we'll be back with Peter. What are we going to be talking about very quickly?
Well, I'm going to talk about the Bank of Canada, actually.
All right.
And then maybe the Federal Reserve. I just... Yeah, you know, it'll be a bit of what I talked in the beginning of the show.
Okay. We'll be right back after Bird Note.
Okay. This is Bird Note. What did chimney swifts do long ago, before chimneys existed? Back then, there were many big hollow trees for swifts to roost and build their nests inside. Swifts can't perch with their tiny legs. They can only cling onto a rough vertical surface, like the inside of an old tree, or a brick chimney. Over the last few centuries, land developers cut down old-growth forests with large hollow trees. Chimney swifts began using human-built structures, which probably gave their numbers a boost. But building styles have changed, and traditional brick chimneys are becoming rarer. Flying insects, which swifts depend on for food, have dwindled due to pesticides. Fortunately, we can provide habitat for swifts right in our neighborhoods. If you have a brick or stone chimney, you can allow swifts inside by keeping it open on top, with the damper closed from April to October. Avoiding pesticides in gardens helps make sure swifts can find food. You can also learn how to build a wooden tower designed for chimney swifts on our website, birdnote.org. I'm Michael Stein. Support for BirdNote is provided by Claudia and Bert Toth and generous listeners around the world.
You're listening to Speak Up here on CJSF 90.1 FM. My name is...
Yes, we don't need that music.
No. Here on CJSF 90.1 FM, Peter, the Bank of Canada.
Well, I met the previous Stephen Politz at the Vancouver Institute with his free lectures over at UBC. This coming Saturday, there's going to be another one, 8:15 p.m. on Saturday. I don't know the topic, but it's kind of hard to get there. They are at the Woodward's Medical Building, and that was the construction. It's kind of hard to tell people how to get there. But the thing is that you can sometimes, for it's free, meet some high-profile people. And we actually, last year, I did meet the last one, Stephen Politz. Now, he was Canadian governor of the Bank of Canada from 2013 to 2020. Now, during this period, there was an attempted lawsuit by the group. It's called the Committee for Monetary and Economic Reform. COMER is their short little abbreviation. And they wanted to restore the Bank of Canada, that it was not... That they were giving interest-free loans. Now, the thing that happened, that when we met him, it was a group of us that are into this thing, and I had heard it a number of years, and so he was a pretty well-dressed guy. We figured there was previous to lecture starting. We figured this is the former governor of the Bank of Canada, and so we said, do you think that was right to change it? He told us straight up there was no change. None. Like, as I said.
So it changed from what to what?
It changed that we're basically now really connected with the Bank of International Settlements in Switzerland. Yeah. And we weren't previously to 1974 connected up there. We were basically borrowing from ourselves with interest-free loans and the provincial governments and certain infrastructure, and supposedly the St. Lawrence Seaway was one example, the Trans-Canada, World War II, partly, hospitals and universities after World War II. So this Comer group thought we should go back to that. We should have but you actually have the interest-free loan. It's like if you're borrowing from your parents, or you've got a credit card and it's no longer your parents that you're borrowing from, to make maybe a metaphor.
Yeah.
But what was interesting just now, because I was getting a few things straight before, and then I saw on the CBC, it basically says what I had heard over the years, what I'm telling you, with the changeover. But so we thought he would say, no, it was a good change to have, but he categorically told us there was no change. And I think, I don't know, I can't explain this, because the CBC is a governmental thing also, and they have it more of this other line. So, okay, we kind of covered that for now. I'm going to talk about the Federal Reserve, which was established 1913. Mm-hmm. Ours was established 1935, the Bank of Canada. And supposedly it was 1938 before they did a lot of here in Canada. But I'm going to tell you, one thing that sort of goes counter to none dare call it conspiracy, and I actually, but they quoted Life magazine from 1949, and this was supposed to be the backup that J.P. Morgan had manipulated the 1907 panic, and that, you know, and he did this to establish the Federal Reserve and so on. So I said, well, I can go to the Central Library and read the 1949 Life magazine because they have it.
Yeah.
So it was basically a book excerpt. And briefly what happened, which they don't really say in Undercall Conspiracy, was there were two deep panics, 1893 and 1907 states. Now, these were deeper than a 1929 stock market crash, except they were dealt with because they were about money itself, whereas the 29 was about stock value. Right. This is about values of money itself. And
one of the things that I think many people don't understand that well is that, or is not that well known, is that in the 19th century, the 1800s, there were regular economic crashes that were really quite severe. I mean, they weren't, you know, as you say, they weren't, you know, the Great Depression was different because it had a slightly different basis and it went on much longer, which is why it's the Great Depression. But these sort of economic crashes and panics were pretty routine.
Yes. Well, yeah, I mean, maybe you know a bit more than I do on that one. No, but I'm just saying that it was the funnel. It was the currency itself was at issue. So what happened was that what I read, what had happened, which they don't really say in Undercall Conspiracy, but I'm going to tell you briefly what it was that J.P. Morgan was semi-retired by that point.
Yeah.
He was at some Bible conference, actually, and they told him, hey, you got to get back to New York City. There's a problem here.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then it was pretty serious, and so what happened was that J.P. Morgan had some people, high finance people, and then they had he locked them in a room at his mansion, supposedly played solitaire while they came with some sort of concept, and then he would say no, that's the wrong concept, go back and think it again. This happened a few times. So what it was, they said, well, you, J.P. Morgan, buy up U.S. Steel, like a majority stock in it, which was against the antitrust regulations at the time established by Theodore Roosevelt. So he went to Theodore Roosevelt and said, it is going against your new antitrust regulation, but we feel this is how to subside the panic.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was basically done. So the Federal Reserve in 1913 was kind of established to not have J.P. Morgan so much part of the economy as such. But he was, as it were, still like an actual influencer, of course. But that's not sort of said in the more reactionary things about it. Anyway, so I'm giving you a bit of a balanced mm-hmm. view in general. But here comes something. One thing that they always bring up, maybe our listeners also hear Coast to Coast AM
mm-hmm.
with George Norley. They may have even remembered Art Bell. But one thing about the Federal Reserve is that a lot of people make up is that it was Jekyll Island where they went to form it. So then Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, of course. It's Dr. Jekyll. So actually, okay, Mr. Hyde's the monster anyway.
Yeah.
But this is actually established. What happened was that these high-level people didn't want to be seen going there. And they were like having a duck hunt. One guy even brought a shotgun, supposedly. Yeah. So it was a bit undercover. Some people go to the extent that it didn't go past legislation and so forth, and that it's unfair that way. But it is sort of established that it was undercover,
mm-hmm.
the very bringing forth of it. But I'm going to add a few other things here. Might as well.
Sure.
You didn't come today.
No, unfortunately not.
No, I'm ready for this.
Good. Have some music we can play too.
No, okay. Well, here's some music.
Okay.
Brother, can you spare a dime?
That would have been a good one to have up, and then we'll be back to continue our conversation in just a moment. That was Ruby Singh in a track called A Wolf in Cedar's Clothing. You're listening to Speak Up, and we got just a few minutes left in the program. Democracy Now! Is coming up at 11 o'clock, and coming up at noon, you'll find Wandering Rhythms with Nick Legacy. Peter.
I'm going to finish off is like, you may wonder why that strange pyramid figure is on the back of the United States $1 bill.
Yep.
And I don't think I brought this up on this show previously, but I have the whole story on it. So what it was that thing was the pyramid and the eye.
So it's like, yeah, it's like a pyramid.
Yeah.
And then on the top, there's a little section that's different. Maybe it's not even quite attached. And then there's an eye. It's a very strange.
That was developed. In fact, the very artwork itself was the late 18th century.
Yeah.
And the other side of it, which is like a circle, which was kind of – was originally kind of be a coin thing. You have the eagle, and that eagle was the branches or whatever it is. That's on the back of the American $1 bill also. Yeah. So those things were kind of more to be a coin kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that was the very image of it was developed 18th century, the graphic representation. So what happened around 1937 or so – he later became vice president under Franklin Roosevelt, but he was Department of Agriculture.
Who was that?
What?
Who was that? What was his name?
Well, I forget his name. Anyway, but he said to Franklin Roosevelt, he said, oh, you only see what the eagle presented. Why don't we do a special coin that has both? It has the pyramid thing and the eagle thing. That was just to be a commemorative coin. Yeah. And then Franklin Roosevelt got the idea of putting it on the back of the $1 bill.
Yeah.
And he went to Roman Catholic leaders who might be offended by that rather odd thing. And supposedly Franklin Roosevelt had a Mason's background. But they say Washington, D.C. is built on Freemasonry.
I was wondering whether the Freemasons and whatnot were going to come into this.
No, but I don't. I'm not really. I don't put much thing that they're that important. But I just thought in the moment to hear it say that's why it's there, and that's how they did it. It's kind of an odd thing. I would have just sort of said don't do it myself, but I don't know what it means. I don't know what it means that he chose to do it, because it is odd to put it there.
It is odd, and it's funny because it's often a symbol that's associated with the Illuminati, which is, I'm not even sure if people take that idea seriously or not, but they talk about it a lot, right? The Illuminati, some sort of secret society that controls the world.
I don't know. I don't really go with the Illuminati theory.
Oh, I know, but I mean that symbol is often
associated
with that too, so which leads to people to...
Well, it's actually, as I said, the imagery, that it wasn't just somebody didn't draw it up because it was already done.
Yeah.
This is the American Revolution or whatever they're sort of thinking. Mm-hmm. So I don't think there's much importance to the Freemason... aspect, which does exist. Franklin Roosevelt was a Mason, and I think the Father Bush was a Mason too. But anyway, just to finish it off, it is a bit odd that they got it on there.
It is odd, and it definitely provides a lot of material for people who want to read a lot into all this different symbology that they see in different places, and then they associate it with groups like the Masons and secret societies that Ivy League colleges, which are just like student clubs, but you know, there's all these different things that, you know, people start reading in these connections, whether it's anything we're to take seriously or not.
Well, I mean, there's other things to take seriously, like the World Bank, IMF, and other things. But I thought to put that. But I don't know. Yeah. Like when in Latin it says New World. On the pyramid, on the top and the bottom, says New World Order, and it approves of our undertakings. This entity approves of our undertakings. That's
okay.
If you translate, do people still study Latin? You can find out for yourself.
All right,
and go to the United States to get a $1 bill.
Cool. Well, it's a fun bit of trivia, Peter. Thank you very much. My name is Magnus Tiebold. With me is.
It's Peter Raymond Haskell, Peter R.H.
Yeah, and we'll be back next week. Hopefully, Ayu will be here with her arts report. Coming up in a few moments is Democracy Now! At the top of the hour. Wandering Rhythms at 12 noon and typically Tuesday. A new episode will be up at 3 o'clock. And lots more here on CJSF. Stay tuned. Thanks for listening.